Christy Balsall speaking. Welcome. It's Friday, November 4th, 2016, and we're going to talk today with Nurse Cheryl Clough, who I will introduce in just a moment, about getting through the day with Mito, treatments, supplements, and humor. So this is really fun and exciting and really timely as we get into the more stressful last couple months of the year, where for many patients and parents alike, it can be a little overwhelming to manage Mito and everything else that's happening. Really excited to have you with us today, Cheryl. Let me just tell everybody how they can find the slides. So if you're listening live, then welcome. And you can find those slides by going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/MitoAction. Or if you're looking on your iPad or a phone for those slides, then just use your app to search for MitoAction and look for the MitoAction page. And then there you'll see that the most recent post is a link to the slides. If you click on the picture there, you'll get to the slides. Alternatively, you can go to mitoaction.org, and on that homepage, you'll see under recent news, getting through the day with Mito. If you click on that, it'll take you to the announcement for our presentation today. And in the Join Us box, you can click to view the slides. If you're listening to this as a recording and you'd like to view the slides, then please visit mitoaction.org/blog. And then in the search box, you can look for, just type in Getting Through the Day with Mito or Cheryl's name, Cheryl, C-L-O-W, and then you'll find the link to today's slides as well. And if all of that doesn't work, then feel free to email us. I'm Christy, and you can email me, director@mitoaction.org, or Mary Beth, who's our nurse navigator, is always delighted to help as well, and her email is mito411@mitoaction.org. As well, you can always listen to this recording from today. It'll be up in about 24 hours, as well as the archives of all of our prior speakers, which there's quite a few. I think there's around 100 in iTunes or on our website, and so you'll find that link in the blog to view all the podcasts in iTunes. So, getting to business. Again, this is Christy Balsall speaking. I'm the Executive Director of Mito Action and really excited to be welcoming Cheryl with us today. Cheryl, I'm going to briefly introduce you and probably not do you justice, so I hope that you'll fill in your bio a little bit. And I want to introduce Mary Beth Hollinger as well, who is Mito Action's nurse navigator and the person who is so helpful on the other end of the line when you reach out to us for support through our Mito 411 program. So first about me, I'm Christy. I have a little girl, Ava, who is actually now 12 years old, who has Lee's disease, which is a type of mitochondrial disease, and she has been the motivation and the reason why I have been tirelessly trying to make a difference in the field of mitochondrial disease and in the patient community and family community, most importantly, for the last 10 years. I'm also a nurse and have a master's in public health, and I'm really excited to welcome all of you to participate today. As a reminder, we'll have Cheryl give her presentation at the beginning, and then we will have an opportunity for questions and some discussion at the end. Right now, everyone is muted, but you can use *6 to mute and unmute your line when we get to that part. And you can certainly email questions to Mary Beth and I, again, director@mitoaction.org or mito411@mitoaction.org during Cheryl's presentation. So, Mary Beth, why don't I let you introduce yourself, and then we'll introduce Cheryl.
Great. Thank you. Well, just welcome, everyone. I know many of us have been looking forward to this presentation, and thank you so much, Cheryl, for taking time out of your day and giving it to our community so generously. I am Mary Beth Hollinger. I am a pediatric prepared nurse. I do get a master's degree in both education and clinical nurse specialty in the pediatric realm, which I have thoroughly enjoyed and really found my home. After my daughter got sick, I was not able to work as much, so I sort of stumbled upon the role of volunteering with Mito Action, and that role has grown, and it's just been a great way for me to spend time at home, yet still feel my need to help other people, you know, with nursing skills or just communication skills or empathy or whatever it is that, you know, creates a nice connection, because it helps me as well. So I thank all you guys for sharing your stories with me and just being so generous with me and my time. And so that is kind of how I ended up with MitoAction, and it just has been a wonderful experience. So I really encourage everyone to get out there and volunteer for whatever you're passionate with, because it really brings a lot of meaning to everyone's lives.
Thanks, Mary Beth. Now, Cheryl, on to you. I would just want to thank you first for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to your presentation, getting through the day with Mito, not just treatments and supplements, but humor as well. And so, everyone, Cheryl has been an advocate for patients with mitochondrial disease for over 10 years, and officially she's the clinical care coordinator in the Department of Pediatrics at Albany Medical Center. And Cheryl, I know you're also very involved with facilitating care of patients with mitochondrial diseases, and not just focused on children, but with adults as well. I didn't know until I saw your bio that you were Employee of the Year just a couple years ago at Albany Medical Center, and the Nurse of the Year finalist a couple years in a row recently, and that you're also on the Medical Advisory Council for Make-A-Wish. And I'll add that I know that you're very involved with the region's Mito Hope and Help group as well, which we have partnered with and are proud to cooperate with as well. So, Cheryl, I'm really excited. Anything you want to add to your bio about yourself before we officially get started with your slides?
Oh, not at all, my dear. Thank you very much, Christy.
Okay. Well, I will just say that, Cheryl, you have such compassion and heart and energy that you bring to the community. I'm really excited about your presentation today. So without further ado, everyone, will hand it over to Cheryl. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Christy. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to everyone today. I have to say, in order to start everything off with a laugh, that when one is nervous in speaking, you envision your audience, maybe in their underwear. I think everyone has heard that before, but I'm asking you today, everyone, to envision me in my underwear sitting here at this desk and giving you this talk to bring a little smile to your face at first. My first slide, Getting Through the Day with Mito, skip right over that one and go to the second one. I put this slide in there because I think it brings appreciation for individuals who are different, whether they be children or whether they be adults. And it's okay to be the girl on the right. In fact, I like to be on the girl on the right all the time. So in your day-to-day living with chronic illness, whether you're a child, an adolescent, or an adult, young or older adult, again, be proud of who you are. Know that you have special gifts and share them. Patient care considerations for individuals with mitochondrial disorders, whether they be children or adults. We all know it's a disorder of multi-system organ dysfunction and in some cases organ failure. One of the hallmarks, I think, of the disorder, at least in working with patients, is fatigue and chronic pain. I think those are some of the things that are most important and interfere with day-to-day living, whether it's going to school, going to work, or just interacting with family and friends. Certainly not to minimize the other issues of what you eat, how you go to the bathroom, if you are able even to move through your digestive system. Temperature regulation, my adult patients have a very difficult time, those that have problems with this. Even the children sitting in school, that's another consideration. When I talk about environmental hygiene, one of the big things are individuals that are attending school or in a workplace such as a daycare center, places like that where exposure to illness is very high, and how to minimize the risks and keep oneself healthy. Any illness, as we know, stresses the energy system. So that is another consideration, that even if you are in tip-top shape, what happens when an illness strikes? Emotions, whether they be sad emotions or angry emotions or excited, you've won the lottery emotions. Anything can tax the energy system a little bit, and what to do about those. And certainly on my list that is listed last, but not least at all, is exercise. And what does exercise mean from person to person? when you think about this disorder of all these systems, you want to treat the symptoms of the affected organ system, regardless of the underlying cause of the problem. I think a lot of times we all say, I have X, Y, or Z because of my mitochondrial disorders. And there are individuals in practice that don't understand what that means. So the organ system that is having a problem, it is important to get to whomever it is that can take the best care of that. If you have a problem with your gastrointestinal system, you should see or think about seeing a gastroenterologist. If you have heart problems or blood pressure problems or problems with dysautonomia, you should be seeing cardiology. So headaches, fibromyalgia, the neurologist comes in. So think about all of those systems. It is very burdensome on a person and a family to be seeing all the specialists. However, you wouldn't go to the cardiologist for a problem with your gastrointestinal system. And I think seeing the primary for everything that may have an issue is also, you may not be getting the most comprehensive, up-to-date information to take care of whatever it is that's ailing you. What we have found, and it seems to be true across the board for children and for adults, that when you have one affected system that's having a problem, you may have your increased, we call them mito, in quote, symptoms throughout. In other words, with a bout of constipation, you may have increased headaches. If you have increased headaches, you'll have increased fatigue. Again, we call that the ripple effect throughout each system. For our next slide, which is slide number 5, when you talk about fatigue, what can you do to be proactive? Plan rest periods. If school is a very long day for children, work with the school with the 504 plan or the IEP plan and see if you can have times during the day that the child can rest. It doesn't necessarily need to be in the nurse's office, although most schools like it there. We caution that the nurse's office is also a place for a hotbed of catching something. So the sick kids, where do they go? They go to the nurse to lie down. So you may want to find a different place. A wheelchair if necessary. It doesn't mean that things are getting worse or things are progressing. What it is you make sure that the child, or the adolescent in this case, many times, you say that you're conserving their energy. It's all in the presentation or the approach, because kids don't want to be different. They want to be like their peers. So using a wheelchair sometimes is something that they don't want to do because it draws attention to them. Let them know that you're conserving their energy for their after-school activities if they're able to do that. Adults have an easier time, I think, saying, I'm tired and I need a wheelchair. For children and adolescents, abbreviated gym class. Instead of putting it at the beginning of the day, see if you can work with the school in putting it as the last class or one of the last classes. We find very frequently that if you do gym class at the beginning of the day, the children are too fatigued later on to pay attention to core classes. Remember how much energy that your brain takes to pay attention, and also just to sit in a chair takes energy. We've also had success in abbreviating a school day, going half days, early day, later in the day, maybe go in at 10, come home at 2, and also tutor as necessary. This is, again, working with the school district. They have very strict guidelines. I think a student may have to miss 3 consecutive days in a row. However, if they understand the full picture, that this is something that happens intermittently and consistently, they may be willing to work with you and have a tutor in more quickly than later. When you're taking vacations or shopping, try to plan whether you can get everything done in one day. That's a really long day for anyone, let alone someone with a disorder of energy metabolism. You may have to separate out certain things and say, we're going to do this for 2 hours and then they're going to rest. We're not going to try to do something at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's better, more quality time if we do it at 10 o'clock in the morning. Office visits are the same way for medical office visits. When you talk about having to drive sometimes very far, 1, 2, and 3 hours to get to your specialist and then have a visit and then drive all the way back. That takes a lot out of someone. You have to plan. If you have a good advocate at the physician's office and you need 2 or 3 appointments, you can hook up in the same day, so it's only 1 drive versus 3 drive. I think that would be the better way to go. For individuals or adults who are working, Sometimes they have to go to employment part-time. May not be that they can't work at all, but it's part-time work. We've done letters before for our adults to say that this individual is not able to stand on their legs for 8 hours a day or even 4 hours a day. Maybe they could stand for 15 and 30-minute increments, have a chair available to them, and then continue on. Asking your providers to do little things like that for you, a letter to your employer, sometimes is very helpful. I think it's important to know that anytime you are asking for something that will benefit you, approach with individuals who don't understand is key. In other words, not walking into somewhere and demanding X, Y, or Z, but more, would you be willing to do this for me? Can you help me have better quality of work and life by doing this letter? Sometimes you can make up the letter and, you know, hand it to them and say, look, would you be willing to write this type of letter and sign your name to it for me so that I can work more efficiently? Fatigue as we go along. Considering coenzyme Q10, whether it's Cyto-Q, CoQ10, whether it's powder that you get from Acton Pharmacy or Epic for Life or any of those, that's the first thing that almost all individuals recommend to try taking when you have mitochondrial disorder, disease, dysfunction. Some people benefit from it. Not everyone does. Some people may have side effects from it. But I think that that is well worth trying. Be very careful on what type you get. I would get a reputable one. In other words, I wouldn't necessarily run off to Walmart, Target, or whatever and just buy what's off the shelf, because when you get it over the counter like that, it is not FDA regulated, and you're just not sure what you're getting. Because many people are paying for it out of pocket, you want to have good quality. Carnitine. I know that with the last consensus statement, individuals may or may not be on levocarnitine, and there's currently, I believe, a nationwide shortage with the tablets right now for generic carnitine. So some of you may be experiencing your pharmacy saying, I can't get it for you. The brand name is available, but the copays are higher most often. Sometimes the insurance companies won't cover a brand name, but in this case, you are not able to get the generic. So I think that's key in trying to acquire levocarnitine for yourself or your children at this point in time, is to say it is not available in a generic form. Therefore, we feel you should cover it in the brand name and keep the copay the same. All they can tell you is no, you're not any worse off if you ask. Sometimes we move the CoQ10 dose or the carnitine dose time. If adolescents are taking after school or participating in after school activities, sometimes we move the carnitine and the CoQ10 dose around. And instead of maybe taking it at lunchtime, we move it to just after school before the activity. That has helped with some of our individuals having enough energy to participate throughout the exercise that they're doing. Physical therapy, it can be very helpful. Remember that a conditioned muscle is much more efficient using energy than a non-conditioned muscle. Now, I'm not talking about weightlifting necessarily, or, you know, looking very buff like Arnold in the day. What I mean is just to move the muscles. If it's too painful for a person to move the muscle, or child or adult, that's what physical therapy can help teach family members, how to move that arm or that leg and keep things conditioned. You don't necessarily have to do it yourself for effect on your own. If someone is moving your arms and legs for you, that is still working to condition a muscle. We believe in complementary therapies. Certainly, if someone's in a great deal of chronic pain, they may not want to have massage, but any of the acupressures, the acupunctures, therapeutic humor, and I will get to more about that. Sometimes decreasing carbohydrate intake is helpful. Now, I do not mean the Atkins diet, and in certain types of seizure disorders, there's something called the ketogenic diet that is used, but that must be done only under direct medical supervision and with a dietitian who's aware on how to do that. We're talking about, when we say carbohydrate intake, like Halloween, let's take that for instance, since that was last week. Eating 4 candy bars may not necessarily be in your best interest when you get a high rise of blood sugar, and then your insulin working to keep that down. You may get a headache, you may get a hot flash, maybe 1 candy bar if you have to have it, that's fine. Good nutrition is really the way to go. And what do we mean by good nutrition? We mean eating vegetables, eating fruits, eating the right amount of protein, if your body can take that. Again, we know that there are individuals out there who are not able to eat. We recommend if you have difficulty chewing or it tires you out easily, using soft foods, sometimes making a smoothie. We really recommend meeting with a dietitian to go over what would be best for you so they can tailor your plan. Keeping in mind always that no two individuals with this disorder are alike. In chronic pain, no one feels well having intractable chronic pain. It tends to change personality after a long time, not even sometimes even after a week of chronic pain. Someone who may have been a happy person and who was laughing now is grouchy, doesn't feel well, big drain on the energy system. You want to move on pain fairly aggressively because you want to conserve your energy for other activities. Illness, trauma, depression, anxiety, and excitement. Again, you would use a lot of energy if you were given the winning lottery numbers. If you have chronic pain, you are much more at risk to have depression, which makes you more fatigued, which makes you more tired, which makes you sleep more, which gives you a quality of life that's very low in most instances. Again, working with someone to address that pain is ideal. Traveling, you have to remember short versus long distances, again, with the medical appointments, trying to keep things to your tolerance or to your children's tolerance. You don't want to go to the doctor to hear that everything is wonderful at this appointment and then to turn around and drive 3 hours home and the child or yourself cannot get out of bed for 3 days. We consider change of seasons for individuals. Do you need a light box, seasonal affective disorder, as these days get longer for that dark period and shorter daylight, individuals can tend to feel much more sad. Again, a light box, sometimes you can approach an insurance company to pay for it. Treat aggressively all of these aforementioned things because you do want to save what energy you have for things other than having pain. There are many new medications available out there, and I'm not one to say hurry up and take a pill so you can feel better, because I think sometimes that's an unreasonable expectation. Society nowadays seems to, we all have what's called the McDonald's drive-through kind of thing. We want instant gratification. And yes, if I've been in pain for a great deal of time, I want someone to fix it, and I want someone to fix it right now. But there are things with medication to do to help you feel better. Therapeutic humor is called. What is that? Laughter. It does promote health and wellness. There are enough scientific studies available for many years now saying that just laughter for 10 minutes a day will alleviate an hour or two of pain. And I don't mean sitting in a chair and going, ha, ha, ha. I mean really belly laughter. Norman Cousins, who wrote the book Anatomy of an Illness, talks about his own illness using vitamin C and laughter to turn around complications from his illness and to get to full recovery. So I recommend reading that book for anyone who's in terrible pain and no medication has helped. Intake. This is a big issue as well when you talk about fatigue. Does a person have adequate fluids and calorie intake? What is adequate fluids? If you're looking at your urine as a measure of whether you have adequate fluids, you want it to be the lightest yellow, hint, like light lemonade. If it's darker and it's bordering on orange or darker than that, you need to kick up the fluids. There is no magic number for every person on what is enough. I seem to think that individuals with mitochondrial disorder use or require more fluids than maybe the average person. They seem to do better with more fluids. The type of fluids and calories, certainly, again, I'm not recommending that everyone run out and drink Gatorade with sugar in it, because I think there are better options available, such as water. And if you have to have something to put in it, maybe you could cut your Gatorade, or you could use G2, I think that's the low-carbohydrate Gatorade, and put some water in that. I can't stress enough about water. If someone doesn't have enough hydration, they will be fatigued. This is true in people who do not have mitochondrial disorder. If your lips are dry, you're behind the eight ball already and you need to have water. When you talk about food or other calories, you talk about protein and fat as well. Again, lower on the carbohydrate. You have to have carbohydrate, but you don't have to go overboard with carbohydrate. You need protein and you need fat. Your mitochondria love fat, actually. I'm not telling you to go out and eat a stick of butter, but again, be aware. Good fats, think of what they are. Olive oil is a very good fat if you're using that on pastas. And again, as I talk about carbohydrate, there are low-carb pastas available out there. Or if you use it in soup, children very often when they don't feel well do take soup or liquids. You could add a little oil in there and boost up the calorie intake, and it's a good fat. One must consider the ability to chew and swallow and digest when you're planning all of the fluids and foods that someone takes. That's why it's a good idea to work with a nutritionist or dietitian if you can. Recommendations, healthy diet if you can. Processed food intake should be very low. We do realize that there are people eating on the fly. If you can take a day or an hour or two once a week to think about what a week might look like for individuals who are able to take food in by mouth, put things in Ziploc bags, put things in the freezer that can be heated up in a microwave very quickly so that you have things to grab on the go. Supplements and the vitamin cocktail, which I'm sure everyone has heard of, it's individualized for each person. I don't know of any two people who are on the same cocktail. The general guidelines are available, but you must work with your physician and patient care team to get exactly what they would like you to take and what time of day they would like you to take it. You do not use more is better when you come into taking the mitochondrial cocktail. You should do exactly what your physician recommends. If you do not see a response, let's say you've been started on the cocktail or parts of the cocktail, and you don't see anything in a day, a week, a month even, there are individuals who say it can take 3 to 6 months. I've been at presentations with docs who have said it can take a while after putting everything together to see a response. What kind of a response might you see? It could be simple as more endurance, which in some cases is, you know, mountainous. It's just a wonderful thing to have more endurance, to be able to stay up a little later, to not have to go to bed after dinner, to be able to have another hour with the family, another hour of homework, even though the kids don't want to hear that. But you get my idea. As I've mentioned before, be aware of differences when you use brands over the counter. Many individuals have problems with constipation and or loose stools. Work with your doctors about considering a laxative as needed. There are some that are not necessarily indicated mitochondrial disorders. There have been previous talks on MitoAction that talk about these types. So again, if your doc is not familiar with that, I would go right to the podcast and take a listen to that one. Adequate fluids. If you don't have adequate fluids and you're taking a lot of fiber, you're going to have cement in your colon. So make sure fluids are on board, whether by mouth or some individuals I know are on IVs or by tubes. Probiotic, most of our patients feel much better on a probiotic if they've had any troubles with elimination. In loose stools, we've found in the past that carbohydrate adjustment may be helpful, going a little bit less, and again, the probiotics. With regard to temperature regulation, heat and cold intolerance is a big deal for individuals. You want to prevent and minimize shivering and overheating because you're using energy there. Work with the schools if it's for a child where, you know, if the body temperature goes up a little bit and there's no other symptom of illness and it happens frequently, work with the schools to not be sending the child home every other time that occurs in the absence of other symptoms. It could be dysregulation. If you have not seen cardiology, that may be something that you want to do to talk about that, and they can refer you on. If not, if there's anything more that needs to be done to help you. You want to, again, when you're talking about going outside in the cold weather, bundle up, layer clothing. Sometimes it takes a lot of energy to do that as well, so you want to stay out for a short time and then come back in. We recommend air conditioning in classrooms when it is going to be above, any classroom that will be above 70 degrees. That's in our area. Now, I don't know, you know, the rest of the country certainly is different. We also recommend that the buses that transport children with mitochondrial disorders have air conditioning available as well. Some of our kids and our adults use a cooling vest, a scarf, and a hat to go out in the summer times, and that is recommended. You want to be proactive and stay ahead of the ball in this case, or ahead of the game, because once you are overheated, you have all your symptomatology may change and increase, and you don't want to have to end up in an emergency room if you can be proactive to prevent it. So again, not getting overheated is the goal here. I say consider restricting outdoor activity in high heat. Restricting to a certain degree, meaning don't go out in the heat of the day. It's just like, you know, when you're talking about sunshine and skin. You don't maybe want to go out in the hours of 10 to 3. You want to go out when it's cooler in the morning or a little bit cooler after the sun has started to go down later in the day. Those are things that you do, again, planning ahead. Humidity is a difficult thing for individuals with mitochondrial disorders, whether you're child or adult. Try to make sure you know where there's a room with air conditioning so that you can cool off the mall or if you're out and about, et cetera. And as I've mentioned, consider a referral maybe to a dysautonomia specialist. Environmental hygiene. For kids, we recommend at school to decrease the viral load. We're not in the habit of recommending a sterile environment for children. We know that the body must build up antibodies to illness, so you have to be exposed. However, repeated exposures are difficult for individuals, especially those that have a prolonged recovery phase. In a prolonged recovery phase, you try to minimize what's happening with illness so that these kids and these adults, if they're working, can attend school. In adults who aren't working, you want them to be able to socialize and be with family members and things like that. So what do we practice? We wipe down keyboards. We wipe down any shared equipment. We ask that schools do that. And most, 99.9% of them have agreed to do this with whatever they use at the school. What do I mean by that? Whether it's antimicrobial, a germicide, or whatever they use, it's different from school to school that we find. I do have a young woman who is working, and they're very good with her. If someone is ill in the workplace and she is at risk, obviously, from exposure to get it, sometimes they will tell her, just stay, work at home. Now, we all don't have that advantage. I agree. But again, there are things to do. You could always go to an employer and ask, you know, is there something that we can do just to minimize? Maybe you could be in a different place of your workspace, not right in the middle of where everyone might be coughing and sneezing, etc. We can't say enough about hand washing. Hand washing, hand washing, hand washing. This is big, especially in the kids. We notice that they're not as good hand washers. Hand sanitizer if you're on the fly. If you can get to water and soap, that's the best way to do it. Illness, treat aggressively. In individuals with mitochondrial disorders, we try with the primary care doctors that we work with, whether they're adult medicine or pediatric, we say, let's not wait and see. Let's try to see this particular person, see if there's an infection that can be treated with an antibiotic. We don't want to overuse antibiotics, certainly, but we don't want to always wait and see. Again, energy usage, ripple effect, possible regression in children with disorders such as strep, flu, high fever, with anesthesia or any surgical procedure. I've seen it in infected toes, individuals, kids missing 2 and 3 weeks of school. Many of the adults have memory loss, not all of them, but some of them do, after an illness. And again, that prolonged recovery phase as you're using energy to recover, it's not uncommon. 4 weeks of recovery time and more sometimes. For adults, especially, consider PT after that type of recovery phase. They may need assistance in trying to get those muscles back up and working. There may be increased pain, increased fatigue, but we want to get everything back to baseline as quickly as possible. Our emotions, large energy usage, again, no matter what we are, to be aware of that. In children, especially if you know that they're going to be excited about something the night before school or the night before a holiday, whatever it may be aware that during the holiday, if they can't get to sleep, get down, and they're all excited, that you may have to plan activities for later in the day on the particular day in question. We recommend treating anxiety and depression very quickly. Sometimes medication is needed. We also recommend counseling. anyone with a chronic illness, whether it's mitochondrial disorders, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, asthma, whatever it is. It's helpful to talk to someone about feelings that you have, about feelings of being different, about feelings of sadness that maybe you can't go on the hike everybody else is going on. That is as important, if not more so, than any of the other medications used to treat some of these disorders. Stress. It could be good stress. It could be bad stress. Talk therapy, mindful meditation. Sometimes people who have never meditated before find great comfort and great calm and peacefulness when they are able to learn how to meditate, and it also works to be somewhat of a pain reliever as well. I think for care providers and for family members and friends of individuals with chronic illness, you must validate the symptoms of the patient and the family. They are going through unbelievable things that we know nothing about, trying to get to doctor's appointments, trying to get medications covered that may not necessarily be covered, trying to advocate for this person, trying to make sure they have the best of everything that they need. Now, my next slide, which is slide number 14, and is the Snoopy slide, I call that, I put this up there to say there's always at least two, if not three, ways to think of things. The glass half empty. Someday we will all die, Snoopy. The glass half full. True, but on the other days, we will not. I tend to have the personality of Snoopy. However, there are days when we all feel like, okay, this is the worst day. This day needs to hurry up and be over with. But the mind, if the mind stays there, about this being the worst day, the body will follow suit. If we feel well, then our minds are happy, we feel good. If we have a lot of pain, it's very difficult to turn around and say, what is good about this day? It takes a concerted effort to say, okay, let me try to smile for 30 seconds. Sometimes you can fool your body into feeling better if you can smile, even if you have to fake it. What is it? I think sports individuals say fake it until you make it. Sometimes it is forced, but in the end, you may, by the end of the day or later in the day, may feel a little bit better. Exercise. If you don't use it, you'll lose it. Again, I can't say enough about physical therapy and working with all of your other therapies. Even a deconditioned patient should be encouraged to exercise. If you can only stand up from the bed or the couch, that's one thing. If you can't get out of a bed or off the couch, raise your arm. Maybe just lifting your hand. Some little thing to keep moving that muscle a couple of times a day. A 20-year-old non-exerciser is less healthy than a 65-year-old who exercises. You talk about endurance exercise versus resistance training. Slow. These are slow things. This is not about working to run the marathon. Individuals with mito feel like they run the marathon every single day of their lives. But again, some different movement will help those muscles. It's important to never exercise in a fasting state. So in other words, no getting up out of bed and then going for a walk unless you've had some snack or some breakfast or some type of calorie intake prior to doing that. The recommendation has been snack within an hour of completion of exercise as well, using protein and a carbohydrate because you want to refuel the muscles. Be considerate, we say, of patients with exercise intolerance. Not everyone can do any kind of exercise because they're in too much pain or they have too much fatigue. So we all need to be aware of that and be open to that and accept. Okay, next one is be proactive. Yes, sweat the small stuff, and you've heard this before. There are other individuals who've given talks on this and written papers and things. We evaluate, have patients go in for looking at a treatable illness. If a primary care office says, wait and watch and monitor, we get on the phone and say, please see the patient today, please. Consider alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin C. These are very potent antioxidants. Again, using them under medical supervision. But I have had individuals who have gone on these and said that they've had seasons with no illness in the family with the person on alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin C when everyone else got sick. So there is something anecdotally to that, absolutely. Check your vitamin D and ferritin level. This is important with fatigue. if you can treat it, do so. It can help the fatigue levels. Low vitamin D and low iron, and being anemic, are known to cause people to be tired. One could consider, this is with a doctor, this is a doctor supervision, consider some magnesium. You could ask your doctor if you have a lot of muscle pain and constipation, would that be something that you should take? Creatine has helped with energy, but again, only working with your doctor. I never, never, never advise patients to do this without speaking with a physician first. Flu vaccine is appropriate. We are aware that some people cannot take the flu vaccine. If there are kids and they're able to have the flu vaccine and they're in school, we recommend that for our patients. Consider referrals for things like a sleep study. That's another reason someone can be fatigued. They may not realize that they're having sleep apnea during the night, so we do recommend a sleep study for all ages. Consider cardiology visit with an echocardiogram and EKG, nutrition dietitian evaluation, pulmonary, that's the lung doctor, ophthalmology, the eye doctor, the ear doctor, ENT and audiology evaluation, physical, occupational, and speech therapy. These are certainly for the children, adolescents, and adults. A chiropractor, massage, and energy work. These are things that are complementary and that help people feel better. Sometimes there are problems with the endocrine system, or you may have joint pains and need to see rheumatology. Palliative care is very helpful when you talk about pain medication. They're very good at knowing what to use in a stepwise process to help you. Certainly, again, last but not least at all, counseling and psychiatry. Sometimes just counseling isn't going to maybe do the job. We need to get over the hump using some medications that are available, and usually the psychiatrist will prescribe them where the counselor cannot. Things to think about. No two patients are alike, therefore no two treatments, therapies will be the same. I know that it's very important for people to have support of others who are in the same situation, but always remember that your treatment may not be the same as another person's treatment. First and foremost, do no harm. There are many things out there that are said to help people with regardless of the medical backing they have. Do no harm. If you're researching things and you want your doctor to help you try them, certainly go to them with the information and see what you can come up with. The quality of life issues, the ability to perform activities of daily living, that doesn't mean school and employment always. It means putting your socks on, putting your underwear on. Can you do those things for yourself? Are you able to make a meal? Can you feed yourself or get things to take care of those things? Mitochondrial disorder does not define the person. They are affected by the dysfunction in the different organ systems, but you are still a person. Your children are still people underneath. A community specialist does not need to be an expert in mito. Many times you'll go into the gastroenterologist, they'll have no clue what mitochondrial disorders are, but they know the GI system. Do not dismiss them. Let them help with the symptoms that you have in an effort to feel better. And I bring up the topic of medical marijuana and Marinol using in mito. I know there are different rules right now for different states, and you go with what your state says. If your doctor, it's something to consider if you have intractable pain. I think I've seen it work in patients and done very well. Most of the insurance companies may not cover it, and it's very expensive, but it is something to consider to help with those kinds of things. Questions?
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for that wonderful overview and good reminders for those of us who have been managing mito for a long time, and really important points for people who are new to managing their symptoms, parents and adults alike. So I do think that we have some questions, and before we open up the lines for callers, let me just remind everyone that once we do, you can use *6 to mute and unmute your own line. You can also just use the mute button on your phone. And that helps us be able to hear everyone, so please do that. And I also remind you that today's call is being recorded, so while we appreciate a little bit of background information, I encourage you to keep your question a little bit more global and relevant to other listeners as well. Mary Beth, did you get any questions via email before we get started?
Yes, I actually have currently four questions, and I'll just throw out there, you can email your questions, mito411@mitoaction.org, or director@mitoaction.org if you have any other questions and you don't want to raise them yourself. But I will ask one from Jane, who's from Oregon. She's a part-time college student, and she's asking about fatigue and wondering how best to help others understand her fatigue. I think probably because it comes and goes, but she didn't specifically state that. And she mentioned specifically family members and friends, as well as like the college professors.
Certainly, and this is something that is seen. And Jane, don't feel like you're alone, because we see this in adults, especially because of the lack of understanding, because you don't look any different, and they want to know why you are tired all the time, and you should get up and do things. I think that going on to the MitoAction website and looking up the part about what is mitochondrial disease, and that providing that to family members and friends, actually, and people at college, even your professors, and so they understand what is happening in your body. I think that is something to start with, going there, and then looking online. If you're in college, I know you are fluent in Google, and looking up fatigue and mito and seeing what is there and presenting that as well. If you are working with a provider who is helpful and willing to talk to any school personnel or willing to do a letter for you, that's another option, is putting it to print to say this person has mitochondrial dysfunction and this is what you will see with fatigue. And I think that makes your case for you.
Oh, thank you. That's great, because I totally believe that knowledge is power as well, and you might as well share that power and have other people, you know, get on board through understanding. So, great answer. Can I ask another one? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary Beth. That'd be great.
Okay. Bill from New York is a dad of a child. I don't know the age. And he's wondering about the GI tract. His child's GI function swings, sounds like, quite drastically from being very loose, having very loose stools, to constipation and back and forth and back and forth. And it seems like they're having trouble finding that balance of, holy cow, now we're too far one way, now we've got to swing back the other way, and sort of using competing medications because things are just falling off both ends there.
Are going one way and the other. What we've seen, I should say, here in working with our GI folks as well, is I know it sounds, you know, a little bit minimized, but really to try, if Bill has not tried this for his son, is try the probiotics with approval from the gastroenterologist or the physician that they're working with. That has very much seemed to help several of our children. That's why I say that. Probiotics, and also working with a nutritionist or dietitian to look at what the child is taking in to see if they can find a pattern, keeping a food journal and a bathroom journal, if you will, so they can look at what is this child consuming and then what happens to the gut afterward. And maybe they can come up with a plan and recommendations so things stay stable versus roller coastering.
Yeah, great advice. And same with the probiotics that you mentioned. I know that getting a quality one so that those little organisms are actually still alive when you consume it is important. So that's a very, very good point. Christy, do you want to ask one, and you can come back to me?
No, go ahead with the ones you've gotten over email, Mary Beth, and then we'll open it up to the callers.
Okay, great. We also got an email from Susan, and she had two questions. Number one, do IV fluids improve the overall ability of mito patients to function? And if you're saying yes to that, Cheryl, she wonders if it's simply saline. Oh, and there's a third question. Do you have experience observing patients that do follow that ketogenic diet?
Okay. So from what, again, this is what I can speak to, what we have done in the last 10 to 13 years here. For adults who have had difficulty maintaining hydration and do poorly, they have benefited from IV hydration. I think so. That's a yes to that question. And I, again, that's working with a physician who's got experience in doing that. Can you, Mary Beth, mind giving me number two again?
Oh, sure. It's right here. Number two,
yes,
are the IV simply saline?
Oh, thank you. Not always. In certain instances, it may be just normal saline, and in other cases, we actually use D5 and half normal saline. So we've done both.
Great. And the third part was your experience with patients following the ketogenic diet.
Right. I personally have not. We have patients on ketogenic diet, but we have not prescribed them for it. I do have patients on a lower carbohydrate diet who have had interesting changes when with regard to elimination. They may have, the one had acidic stools and diarrhea all the time, and going on the low-carb diet, that's the only change, eliminated that, and the elimination is normal now. Again, ketogenic diet, usually neurology does that with a dietitian, but it doesn't always have to be neurology, but that would be where I would point someone looking for ketogenic, and that's you need to be under medical supervision. You must with that kind of diet. That's very, very strict, and you can have electrolyte problems if you're doing that. Please do not anyone ever do that on your own.
Great. Another has come in. First of all, quite a few have said to please thank the speaker for your wonderful information, and they so appreciate all the information that you provided. An adult patient in Florida has asked about variability of symptoms, and she does not understand why she feels good some days and even up to a week, and then for no apparent reason feels quite poorly.
Okay, and I'll hedge a bet here. Sometimes individuals, when they're feeling very well, especially if they're feeling well for a week, will say, oh, I can do X, Y, or Z, and they actually go beyond what they might be doing with activity or exercise or shopping or something else because they do feel so well. And then that triggers the, oh my gosh, I can't get out of bed for 3 days. I would start, truthfully, to keep a journal of what you eat, what your activity level is. Also, what is the weather and the humidity level? Because I find with my adult patients particularly that if a weather front is coming in, and again, we're in the Northeast, so there's a lot of them, that they do poorly just with a change of weather. Even in someone who doesn't have environmental allergies, sometimes when things are floating around in the air, it triggers a response that is so subclinical. The body, you know, no one sees it. You're not sneezing. The eyes aren't running, but you have an energy response to fighting that. So in an effort to try and find out why the roller coaster, see if you can keep a journal, not forever, but even for a couple of weeks, to see if you find a pattern.
Makes good sense. At this time, those are all the questions that have come to me via email.
Okay, let's open up the lines and take some questions live. So as a reminder, you can use your own mute button or *6 to mute and unmute your own line. So if you have kids, dogs, work, music, whatever, just keep that in mind, please.
My name is Fred.
We'll just take turns here. So who would like to ask the first question?
My name is Fred. I'm not sure mitochondrial or not, but I've gone to all sorts of doctors. I have crashing temperatures. I go into low exercise hypothermia. Temperatures get crashed to 94.
Fred, we're having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. It sounds like you're breaking up and there's some background noise, so let me interrupt you. So everybody, if you don't mind using *6 to be sure to mute your line or the mute button on your phone, just double check that you're doing that, please. It helps us to be able to hear. So Fred, you were breaking in and out a little bit, but it sounds like you have a lot of variability in your body temperature. Sometimes your temperature of your body being as low as 94. Is that what you were saying?
That's right. It never goes high. It's always low. I've been to endocrinologists, cardiologists, neurologists, the whole nine yards, and they all just scratch their head and say, we don't know why.
Fred, if you don't mind me asking, have you ever been to a metabolic geneticist?
No, I haven't, and I don't know how to find one.
Mary Beth, are you able to find out where Fred is living and hook him up with someone down there?
Atlanta, Georgia, Cumming, Georgia. Yeah.
So Fred, why don't you send us an email, mito411@mitoaction.org, as a first step, But I wanted to jump in and just speak a little bit about temperature variability. And everybody, just because I'm still getting some background, I'm just going to mute everyone, but we will take additional questions. So, Fred, if you try to interject, just know we won't be able to hear you for a couple minutes.
The conference is now in silent mode.
So the variability in temperatures is also an indicator of what's called dysautonomia. And Cheryl, you touched on this, but we could dig into this just a little bit deeper, because I think that often some of the most troubling symptoms that patients with mitochondrial disease and mitochondrial dysfunction experience are related to that dysautonomia, but they're not aware that it's dysautonomia. So then they may go tracking down a visit, for example, with cardiology for variable heart rate, and a visit with GI for variability in erratic bowel movements and changes in constipation and so forth, and not sure why all these things are happening, when really it's because there's the autonomic nervous system, that nervous system which controls the movements which we can't control, like breathing or your gut being able to digest or the rate of your heart, is not functioning properly. And it's very common in patients with mitochondrial disease. And Cheryl, I'd love your opinion. Mine is that one of the cornerstones to treatment on that is really getting solid hydration that is not in a bolus manner, which means you don't have a whole bunch and then nothing and then a whole bunch and then nothing, but that it's steady throughout a 24-hour period. I think that that really helps. And I've had a lot of patients say that the mito cocktail has really helped. Cheryl, what are your comments?
That is our experience, as particularly with the adults as well. Some of our adults are not, with those symptoms, who are on IV fluids at home, are not able to run over 24 hours. But you are right, instead of running something for 3 hours or four, you know, 10, 12 overnight, 14 hours is, you know, what they do, and they feel so much better. There's so much less roller coastering, absolutely.
So we have actually some really excellent discussions and resources about dysautonomia on the MitoAction website. Some of those talks are by Dr. Richard Bowles, who has a unique approach to mitochondrial disease management. So let me just remind you guys how you can do that. If you go to mitoaction.org, and then in the upper right-hand corner, there's a search box. It's dysautonomia, D-Y-S-A-U-T-O-N-O-M-I-A. So dysautonomia with a D-Y-S. And again, if you have additional questions, Fred, thank you for bringing that up, because although it sounds like you are still trying to figure out on your journey of your diagnosis what's going on, I think that it's really relevant to a lot of people who do have mitochondrial disease as well. So thank you. Mary Beth, anything else you would want to add to that?
I just want to sort of commiserate with Fred, and I know other people with a very low body temperature, like 93, 94, and I can 100% verify that it's not just, oh, my hands are cold or my feet are cold. It is that you feel just downright rotten and flu-like and sluggish and grumpy. So I just want to verify that it is an overwhelming symptom, not just a little number that you write down on a chart somewhere, that having that low body temperature or high really disrupts how you feel. So I'm feeling for Fred.
And I guess one more thing that I would add to Fred and to anyone else who does have a variability in your body temperature, it is important to document that with your primary care provider or so forth, because it can be a source of confusion then during illness. So if your baseline body temp, and this is actually very common as well, particularly for people who have dysautonomia, is 96, then you may be sick with a temp of 99, because that would be the equivalent of someone else having a temp of 101. So you may be experiencing some flu-like symptoms and then present with a fever of 99. And then if you're in the ER, then someone would be most likely saying, well, that isn't really anything that we're too worried about, because you only have a fever of 99. So it's important to document if your baseline temperature is lower, so that then that's able to be calibrated, if you will, in consideration of the big picture for you. Okay, I'm going to open it back up again. Everybody, please help us out and use your mute button or star six so that we can be able to hear everyone as clearly as possible.
Just one other
The conference
question.
Is now in talk mode.
Who would like to ask the next question?
I would like to, this is still Fred again. I just want to know, are there any genetic tests or doctors in Atlanta? How can I find some help?
So, Fred, there's a list of mitochondrial specialists that are on our website. And again, I do invite you to email our nurse navigator, Mary Beth, at mito411@mitoaction.org, and she may be able to help you a little bit more specifically.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Who would like to ask the next question? Okay. I'm going to bring up something that you said early in the conversation, Cheryl, and that was about school. And I just thought that it was really relevant when you were talking about the nurse's office being a hot spot.
Oh, yes, yes.
For germs. I thought that was such a great point, and I just wanted to really bring that back up again because I think it's a real struggle. I can relate as a mom to a child with mitochondrial disease, and I know many parents can as well, to be able to communicate that we're trying to be proactive in using the rest rather than waiting until, you know, the child is a puddle on the desk. We're trying to be proactive in that energy management, and I think that's really a challenge. I do think that it is one of the more challenging aspects of communicating about your disease. And that carries over, like, to our caller who had a question about explaining that for people who are, you know, other people because she's in college, and I think for adults as well.
Christy, I have the benefit here that I am able to either go to some of our schools where our children are having IEP or 504 plan meetings with the family, and so I bring this up to the nurse and to anyone sitting there that, you know, this is something we want in the plan. I've also been able to phone in when I can't be there in person to the meeting so that I can advocate for them. In the event that that's not available to many people, we, you know, a parent-to-parent kind of a program in their area where there's another parent that can advocate as well, or a letter from the specialist or the primary or whomever can write a letter on behalf of the child saying, this is what the child needs. They need rest periods. They need this. If it's got has to be at, you know, in the nurse's office, there needs to be a place set aside for the child and a divider, because we've done that before in an area where we have no other place. And the nurse has Cavi wiped, if you will, down, or Lysol wiped everything for the child, and does that, and that child comes into that room every single day at a certain time and has a half an hour rest.
Excellent strategy. I would add that if you have the financial means, it can be really a gesture that could be appreciated, but implemented as well to donate to your child's classroom giant bottles of Purell, the big packs of Lysol wipes and sprays, as well as I would like to emphasize and re-educate all of my child's teachers that gastrointestinal illnesses are not killed by things like Clorox wipes. They're only killed by commercial solutions or by bleach and water. And often, surprisingly, schools are not aware of that, so they'll furiously Lysol everything during the time of a, you know, rampant stomach bug, and it just keeps spreading. And so a little spray bottle with a bleach water solution, it doesn't have to be very concentrated, is a wonderful gift to those classrooms, because you really do have to be, that's where you're being an advocate, is that you're really, like, making it possible to help prevent that, you know, really devastating illness from moving around the classroom and hopefully preventing your child from having it as well. Do we have any other questions from people who are on the call? Okay, Mary Beth, I have not received any other questions over email. Do you have any additional questions that you've received? Mary Beth? she might
Sorry,
be.
Sorry, I have asked all the questions that came in to me, Christy. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Cheryl, do you have any additional comments or anything else that you want to pass on to our listeners today?
No, just vote on Tuesday.
Well, I want to thank you, Cheryl, for this excellent overview and encourage everyone to tune in to what Cheryl's saying and to reach out with additional questions or help us to help you strategize on ways that you can make an impact. I also want to make two important quick announcements. In December, we actually have two presentations, so you'll want to look for both of those. They're really important. The first one is coming up on the first Friday, which is December 2nd, and that's with Dr. Tarna Pawlowski from Canada, who will be talking about exercise and mitochondrial disease, and he is really, I would consider, world expert in this area. And so that's very exciting. Stay tuned for information about that. Then another important presentation the following week on Tuesday, December 6th, again at noon, it'll be a collaborative presentation between MitoAction, UMDF, Foundation for Mitochondrial Medicine, asking Stealth Biotherapeutics to provide an update on the latest results of their clinical trials. If you want to learn more about those, be sure that you follow us on Facebook, or even better, go to our website and enter your email address so that you'll get a reminder with all of the details about that. We don't share your email with anyone else, but it's particularly if you're a patient or a parent, you definitely want to be on that email list so that you get directly all of these great resources sent to you. Cheryl, on behalf of everyone, I want to just thank you again for your energy and your enthusiasm and your obvious compassion, and repeat to everyone, please join me in thanking Cheryl and everybody. I hope you have a fabulous rest of the week.
Thank you, Christy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.